Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, June 8th, 2006. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week we get a lowdown on the National Homebrewers Conference coming up in a couple of weeks in Orlando, Florida, from Gary Glass, director of the American Homebrewers Association. Well, before we get started, I want to let you know about what's coming up in the next couple of shows. We have some great stuff coming up. Next week, I'll run an interview I did with Greg Noonan, author of New Brewing Lager Beer, among other books, and owner and brewmaster at the Vermont Pub and Brewery, and also founder of the Seven Barrel Brewery. Greg and I tackle the topic of water in home brewing. I've had several requests for a show on water and water treatment, and Greg does a great job of taking us through the topic. Also, in a couple of weeks, I'm planning a show on beer experiments. We'll follow up on the hot side aeration experiment that Brian Warren told us about when we were in Austin recently. We'll be listening to Brian and his friend talk about how those beers are shaping up, how they're tasting over time, whether those tastes have changed or not. Also, I'm arranging an interview with a high school student who he and his dad listened to the show. And this high school student brewed beer in school as a part of a high school lab experiment. So I'm hoping to talk to him and his dad on their shared interest in brewing. And don't worry, his dad is the one who drinks the beer, not the high school student. We're not about condoning underage drinking here at Basic Brewing Radio. Then I'm going to celebrate the first year anniversary of Basic Brewing Radio after that by taking a couple of weeks off. Don't worry, we will return, and when we return, Steve and I will bring you some great information that we've picked up, hopefully, at the Homebrewers Conference. So, a lot coming up. I want to thank Thur in Denmark, I hope I'm pronouncing Thur's name right, for writing us about an article that appeared in the latest issue of the Danish Beer Enthusiasts magazine. Thur says, "Your show was named as one of the best of the many brewcasts out there for both beginners and more experienced brewers. Denmark is right now undergoing the same development in spreading and making good beers available to the people and educating the people about good beer as the U.S. did 10 years ago." Well, that's great. Excellent news. Glad to hear that good beer is making headway in Denmark. And thanks again to Thur for sharing the news about the article. And I want to say hello to any new Danish friends who are joining us because of reading about us in that magazine. Glad to have you on board. And if you're new to podcasting, and if you haven't checked out any of the other beer podcasts from the States, you'll want to check out Craft Beer Radio at craftbeerradio.com. Jeff and Greg take a look each week at mostly American craft beers, but they do a lot of worldwide varieties as well. That's craftbeerradio.com. Pacific Brew News Radio at pacificbrewnews.com, where Rick and Mark and Mike talk about West Coast beers, mostly. And then Big Foamy Head out of Memphis, at bigfoamyhead.com, where Rick and Dick talk about good beer and good music, blues mostly, and also barbecue. And those three podcasts mention this podcast a lot in their shows, and I really appreciate their doing that. And also, The Good Beer Show by Jeffrey T. and his crew up in Muncie, Indiana at goodbeershow.com. There's a huge link to our podcast on his site. And I appreciate that. Appreciate Jeffrey T. And Jeffrey T. is having a coloring contest. And some of the prizes, I guess, are some DVDs, some Basic Brewing DVDs that I donated for that purpose. So good luck if you enter the contest and have fun with that. And listen to all of our podcasting buddies. And hopefully we can all spread the news about good beer to everyone else. We got a note from the fine folks at Redstone Meadery saying that this summer, Redstone is celebrating selling 100,000 liters of mead in its 5 years of doing business. Sounds like things are going very well for them. We've had David Myers, chairman of the mead from Redstone Meadery, on the show, and we've also sampled his terrific mead. So congratulations are in order for them there. Soil Boy from Burton-on-Trent in the UK writes, I've been intrigued to listen to you talk about the pros and cons of glass and plastic fermentation vessels. You seem to assume that all carboys are glass, but I have a plastic carboy. The worst of both worlds, by the sounds of things. So says Soil Boy. Not only is it hard to clean, as with a glass carboy, but it sounds like when I do manage to clean it, it'll end up making loads of microscopic scratches and eventually getting off flavors in my beer. He says that may be a bit harsh, as on their website the carboy sounds perfect, and I've had great results so far. And that's better-bottle.com. We've talked a bit about Better Bottles every now and then on the site, or on the podcast. Soil Boy continues, I originally went for the plastic carboy option as I wanted to be able to see my beer fermenting, but had trouble getting hold of a glass one locally, and shipping is costly. He says, would be interested to hear your thoughts on the matter. Do you or your listeners have any experience of this type of carboy? I've not had a problem yet, but glass sounds a safer option from a sanitation point of view. If this is the case, then I'll have to convince my girlfriend that I need to upgrade to something else that looks the same, but costs more, and is more likely to get broken. And he says, I'll just argue that all her many bags and shoes look the same, and then make a quick dash to the homebrew shop. I'd say he better make it a very quick dash. Sounds like he's opening a whole can of worms there. Now, we as I said before, we have mentioned these better bottle plastic fermenters before, but I haven't got a lot of feedback about them from listeners. So if you've brewed with the better bottles and want to weigh in on the issue of how they perform, I'd be happy to hear from you. Please just write to james@basicbrewing.com or just use the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name if you think there's a chance that I'll screw it up. Brian from Marquette, Michigan wrote in after hearing Steve and me talk about his first letter. If you'll remember, Brian was talking about replacing his plastic bucket fermenters because he was getting some off flavors and he was afraid it might be due to his well-worn buckets. Brian says, I always used soft cleaning materials when cleaning my fermenters, but I think the majority of my scratches come from storing one bucket inside another and also using my buckets to store other equipment. Well, that's a good point. Brian continues, I just brewed my first all-grain batch the other day, Delirium Tremens clone. I used a glass carboy for my primary fermenter, and now I have what looks like a 5-gallon snow globe as a conversation piece in my kitchen. He says, it's amazing how you can see the yeast dancing around in the wort. I find myself just staring at it all the time and daydreaming of what it's going to taste like. I recommend doing a primary fermentation with glass at least once, because it's really cool to see your yeast at work. You know, it's embarrassing, but I find myself doing the same thing. It's incredible just to watch the yeast flow through and cycle through and to work through a healthy fermentation. It's kind of like having a living lava lamp. Now, you just have to make sure that you keep your carboy covered when you're not watching the fermentation, because you want to avoid getting your beer light struck. You wouldn't want a full carboy of skunky beer. Fraser from Melbourne, Australia writes, one item which myself and fellow brewers find almost essential, in wintertime anyway, is an immersion heater to keep the wort fermenting at the right temperature. Here in Melbourne, it doesn't get real cold, but we usually get down to 0 degrees centigrade overnight. That's 32 Fahrenheit. So it's certainly cold enough to mandate the use of a heater. Fraser suggests doing a show on different heaters, and I think that's probably a good idea. I asked if his heater was an aquarium-type heater, and he said yes, it was. So very interesting. It's heating up here in Arkansas. It's getting pretty hot, and it's hard to remember that it's cooling down in the southern hemisphere. And we've talked a little bit about belts and using light bulbs in refrigerators to keep wort at fermentation temperature and such as that. But it may be worth an expanded show on the topic. So thanks, Fraser. Keep warm. Marty from Quincy, Massachusetts writes, here's a tip you might want to share with your listeners. There's a Good Eats episode where Alton Brown discusses growing and drying your own herbs. To dry them, he purchased a number of air conditioner heater filters, stacked them with the herbs in between, covered the top with another filter, and then bungee corded the whole contraption to a box fan, which he laid on its back. Marty says, I haven't tried this, but I see no reason it wouldn't work with hops. It should be as gentle as air drying, but at a much faster speed. Obviously, the filters should be made of some natural fiber and not fiberglass or anything you'd be afraid to eat. That's very interesting. If that works for herbs, it should work for hops, I would imagine. I've got Cascade hops growing in the garden right now, and it's incredible. One vine is already more than 10 feet long. It's pretty exciting. I'm planning on using screens off of my windows to dry my hops, as Dave Wills suggested. And, you know, I bet a box fan would work with them, too, to keep the air circulating through the screens. So thanks for passing along that tip, Marty. By the way, Marty also says the next showing of that Good Eats episode appears to be July 20th. So you'll have to look out for that, too. Excellent. Of course, that's just a tiny sample of the volume of email we get here at Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video. And I want to let you know that I appreciate and answer every message that I get. And I want to thank everybody for being so enthusiastic about the show, our shows, and continuing to listen and to watch and to support our efforts. Now, let's look ahead a couple of weeks to the National Homebrewers Conference in Orlando. We talked to Gary Glass, director of the American Homebrewers Association, about what's on tap, so to speak. And for those who won't get to be there, this will serve as a preview of the wonderful stuff that Steve and I will be covering and will bring back from the conference. And if you would like, you can send in some questions on the topics that you hear us talk about. And Steve and I will try to take those down to Orlando and ask them to the experts in person. So here's our talk with Gary Glass. Well, Gary, welcome once again to Basic Brewing Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Well, it's an exciting event coming up, and it's coming up closer and closer. The National Homebrewers Conference, it's called Gator Tales and Better Ales down there in Orlando, Florida. I guess the first question is, why Orlando?
Well, Orlando is kind of a family destination location, so we figured that our attendees could bring their entire families down for a vacation. Spouses and children can enjoy some of the local attractions like Disney World and SeaWorld and Universal Studios. There's definitely a lot to do in Orlando. So it's a good location. There are a lot of homebrewers in Florida as well. They'll be in for a treat. And certainly some challenges involved in brewing in Florida. So they have some interesting things to overcome, but there are definitely a lot of very good brewers for that reason in Florida.
So what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right?
I would suppose so. The Florida people definitely tend to do very well in competitions, and I think that has a lot to do with being so dedicated to the hobby and overcoming some of the challenges involved in brewing in the subtropics.
Yeah, so they've got warm weather all year round, basically, and they've got to deal with keeping their wort cool. How do they approach that?
Well, I guess there are some ways of getting around the chilling problems. You can put an immersion chiller into an ice bath before running it through a counterflow or another immersion chiller in your wort. That's a pretty good option.
But then there's keeping it cool during the whole fermentation period, or
yeah,
relatively
sure.
Cool.
I would imagine most of the homebrewers down there have dedicated refrigerators and freezers to keeping their beer cold.
Well, that should be an interesting topic of a conversation for us to tackle with homebrewers while we're down there.
Sure. There'll be plenty of Florida brewers down there to discuss overcoming some of those challenges.
So let's go through the week or the events. The I guess people can start arriving. The registration starts on Wednesday, June 21st at the Wyndham Orlando Resort.
Right.
And listed in the evening on the schedule, it just says pre-conference event. What's going to be going on Wednesday?
Well, on Wednesday, things are going to get started with there's actually three pre-conference events on Wednesday night. There's a raffle, or actually going on the Gator Tail, Great Gator Tail Brewing Gadget Extravaganza, which is from 3 to 4, and just an opportunity for all the people coming in from around the country to show off some of their home-built homebrewing gadgets, which is really a fantastic opportunity, because I know a lot of people come up with interesting ways to deal with the art of homebrewing, and I definitely would be interested in seeing some of the things that people have come up with. I always like tinkering with my homebrewing equipment, so it's actually a really cool event that we haven't done at the conference before.
Well, yeah, homebrewers are quite inventive.
Right.
So, yeah, that'll be really cool to see what people across the country are coming up with. And I guess it is people from across the country, not just locally, right?
Right, right. We always get people from all across the country coming in for this.
So we'll may have gadgets dealing with cold as well as heat down there in Florida.
that's definitely a possibility. I know we got some people coming down from as far north as North Dakota.
Well, you said there were three things happening on Wednesday. What else?
Right,
is going on?
And also on that Wednesday we have there's a pub crawl starting at 5. And then about the same time, we've got a Trappist beer tasting.
Oh.
Stan Hieronymus, the author of Brew Like a Monk, is going to be hosting a tasting of all of the Trappist beers.
Boy. So is that an either-or thing? You can either go to the pub crawl or do the Belgian?
Yeah, basically, they're both going on at the same time. So
oh, man.
That could be a tough decision.
Is there transportation to the provided for the pub crawl?
Right. Yeah, there will be it's an additional in addition to the it's not actually part of the conference. It's run by the local clubs, and there's a $25 fee that includes the bus.
Reasonable to ensure your safety.
Yeah.
And to allow you to imbibe liberally without worrying about the consequences, at least as far as driving is concerned.
Right. That's an important thing. Thursday. We have another pre-conference event with a pizza buffet that includes that's at a local pub that has 21 taps, and that's from 11 to 12:30. So they'll be providing a bus for that one as well, and get everybody back in time for the welcome toast at 1:30. We'll also be doing the National Homebrew Competition judging, and this is the second round of the National Homebrew Competition. So we had over 4,500 entries in the first round of the competition this year, which was a new record.
Wow.
It's the world's largest beer competition. This is the second round, so all these entries have won a first, second, or third place in that first round. So the quality of entries in this round of the competition is really extraordinary. So it's a great opportunity for anybody who likes to judge beer to try some of the best in the country. We have judging sessions on Thursday morning, Thursday afternoon, and then Friday morning.
Were there any surprises as far as the number of entries in any category as far as the competition this year?
No, not really any surprises. The top categories have been tending towards the IPAs, the pale ales, stouts, and Belgian strong ales have actually been quite popular the last few years.
Huh.
But definitely a big jump in numbers from last year's competition.
Do you see that as kind of a gauge of the popularity of homebrew?
It goes up and down, but the last 3 years we've had over 4,000 entries in the competition, and I would say that right now we are seeing a resurgence in homebrewing. It's actually pretty exciting time. We're seeing a lot more interest not only in homebrewing but in better beer in general. We've seen a rapid rise in craft beer sales, and I think that the attention that craft beer has gotten has led people into the homebrewing hobby. I'm constantly running into people who are very new to the hobby or who are very interested in getting started in it. I think that's a great trend.
And it kind of feeds back the other way, too. People who get into homebrewing all of a sudden don't like their old standbys as much as they used to and go searching out for better beers out there, too.
As they should, yes.
And then on Thursday, after the opening toast, we start getting into sessions. And one thing that you've done is there are two conference rooms going on at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Which you know, there again, you've got to make a choice between two good things. I'm going with my buddy Steve Wilkes, which is probably the best of all worlds. You know, we can each take notes and hopefully do some interviews when we split up.
Yeah, we have a really fantastic lineup of speakers this year. We have 20 talks, and yeah, probably the best lineup of speakers we've ever had. There are no stinkers on this list, I guarantee. each session is going to be a tough toss-up to decide which one to go to. New for this year, several of the talks that we have are going to be eligible for the Beer Judge Certification Program, Continuing Education Program.
Oh, wow.
So BJCP judges can get educational points for attending some of these talks. And there'll be quizzes for those judges to take to get those points. But that's an exciting new addition for the conference this year. And some of the names that we have for conference speakers would be like John Mallett from Bell's Brewing Company, Lynn Kruger from the Siebel Institute. She's probably got one of the best palates in terms of beer in the entire world. So it's very exciting to have her come down and talk to our Homebrewers Conference. She's a regular at the Great American Beer Festival and training some of the professional brewers in beer tasting. And so having this opportunity for the homebrewers is really outstanding, because normally those talks cost $100 at least.
Well, we've got several people who have appeared on Basic Brewing Radio. Dave Logsdon, one of them.
From Y-Yeast.
Along with Mark Williams giving a presentation on beer style and yeast strains. So that should be good. Ray Daniels has also been on the show. He's giving a talk on the best things I ever learned about homebrewing, which that ought to be a good one.
Right. Coming from the author of Designing Great Beers, I mean, this Ray is certainly one of the most knowledgeable people in terms of homebrewing. His insights are always worth listening to.
And John Palmer also has appeared on this program. He's giving a talk called Engineer Your Beer.
Right. And John Palmer's the book, How to Brew, we just released the third edition. So that's kind of exciting, and we'll have a book signing to go along with that.
Very cool. And then to round out that first day, an overview of wort boiling from John Pinkerton.
And actually, John Pinkerton is the owner and brewer at Moon River Brewing Company in Savannah, Georgia. And he has spoken on this subject to the Craft Brewers Conference.
Ah.
So he's a great speaker, and this is definitely an interesting presentation. A lot of great information that's going to be passed over from what the professional brewers do in terms of wort boiling, which is in many cases very different from what home brewers do. So I think a lot of people are gonna learn some things that they really didn't know about. There's definitely some opportunities with this talk for new gadgets for homebrewing. So I'm kind of excited to have that one there. I think a lot of people, it's going to generate a lot of interest in some new ideas for homebrewing.
We'll be there to capture some of it, so that or capture some of the information, so we can pass it on to the people who aren't able to go to the conference, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And then Steve Hamburg doing a presentation on celebrating session beers,
mm-hmm.
Which is also a good thing. That's something that I've been into lately.
I think it's something that's come out of the last several years. We've seen the rise of the imperial beers, you know, imperial IPAs and imperial pilsners, and popularity of the Belgian strong ales and the barley wines. And kind of as a reaction to that, I think we're also seeing a resurgence in the desire for some very flavorful beers that aren't necessarily quite so potent. You know, it's nice to be able to sit down and have a few beers with some friends and still be able to stand up and walk away.
To have good conversations and remember them
mm-hmm.
Afterwards. That's that's always a plus. Plus, you know, as I get older, you know, it's less about the alcohol and more about the flavor. And, you know, I would assume with the smaller beers comes fewer calories as well. So, you know, there's a plus on two sides there. Not to say that I don't, you know, still enjoy the high-gravity beers, but there's something to be said for the session beers, and they shouldn't be overlooked.
Yeah, certainly not.
And then Thursday evening, White Labs is sponsoring Changes in Latitude and Brewers' Attitudes.
Right. This is our craft beer festival. We have around 20 breweries already lined up, and probably have a few more. And we've got brewers from all over the country, from Anchor and Sierra in California, all the way over to Dogfish Head and Delaware. And pretty excited to have a small brewery from Michigan called Jolly Pumpkin that makes some really excellent Belgian style beers.
Ah.
In addition to several great local breweries. The title of the talk was, or the title of the event, has to do with I think there's a misconception about the lack of good beer in Florida, and there are actually several really good breweries in Florida. So hopefully we can change some attitudes with this one. And White Labs definitely had some very fun aspects to this craft beer festival that we haven't had in the past. They'll be doing a limbo contest and a Hawaiian t-shirt contest and giving away a lot of prizes. So come prepared to have fun. This won't be your typical craft beer festival.
Not that craft beer festivals aren't fun anyway.
No, absolutely. They generally are fun. This is going to be extra fun. Yeah, very unique for this homebrewers conference.
And then thankfully, the session started at 9:30 the next morning, you know, not at the crack of dawn, which is a good thing. But we start with presentations on lactic acid beverages and then filtering beer, less flavor or better flavor. So both of those will be good presentations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Raj Apte, who's doing the lactic acid beverages, he's kind of one of the homebrewing experts on brewing sour beers, like Belgian-style sour beers, as well as other kinds of sour beers. Frequent poster on several of the homebrewing email forums. John Peed is as well common poster to the email forums, and one of the biggest proponents of filtering homebrew.
Ah.
And I know that there's definitely some challenges to filtering on the homebrew level, and he's going to help clear some of those up.
And then the science of maltilicious?
Right. well, that's John Mallett from Bell's. He is one of the more technically knowledgeable brewers in the country, and definitely a very interesting, kind of quirky guy, but a brilliant brewer. And he's going to be talking about the different flavor compounds that come from malt and differences in different mashing techniques and things like that will develop different flavors from malt depending on how you handle it.
And then we go from malting to fermentation, and the flavor is in the fermentation is the name of the competing presentation at that
right.
time.
Right, yeah. This will be definitely a tough choice between John Mallett and Lynn Kruger from Siebel. Lynn's going to be talking about fermentation, and specifically about different flavor profiles coming from yeast, and using different types of yeast, as well as different fermentation regimes, and fermentation temperatures, and that kind of thing. So both those talks would be well worth attending, and unfortunately we had to schedule them right next to each other. So it would be a tough call as to which one to go to.
The amount of variables in home brewing is, or just brewing in general, is tremendous. And the impact that you can have on the character and flavor of your beer just by changing the temperature a few degrees or a few ounces of hops or, you know, the different yeast strain, it's just mind-boggling.
Right, and that's the great thing about home brewing is that there really are no limitations. You can, home brewers are constantly coming up with new styles, and that's really what the homebrewers have funneled their energy into the craft brewing segment and developed all kinds of new styles that were extinct or nearly extinct, and as well as developing entirely new styles. We have in the World Beer Cup this year, was one of our professional level competitions. We had over 80 different styles.
Wow.
I wouldn't even be able to guess how many different sub-styles are within those 80 different categories. So that just kind of goes to show how much range there is, and that's just what people are doing now. And there's no telling what could be added on to that in the future, because, like you said, there's so many different variables, different types of malts, different types of yeast, different temperatures that you can mash at, different temperatures you can ferment at. All of these affect the final outcome and can create completely different beverages.
The keynote address should be a good one this year.
Oh yeah, Greg Cook with from Stone Brewing Company. He's the CEO and one of the co-founders. The Stone Brewing is probably most famous for their Arrogant Bastard Ale.
Mm-hmm.
They're a very unique brewery in that they do almost no advertising at all, and yet they've been one of the fastest growing breweries in the country. In fact, they just went through a major expansion over the past year. And Greg is an interesting character.
One would expect that if you were to judge by the character of his beers, I guess.
Right, and their labels, which proclaim you're not worthy. But I think Greg has a lot of insight as to what we do on the homebrewing level, and certainly his growth has been in large part due to the underground of the beer elite, and most of these are homebrewers, and that's kind of what's fueled the growth of his brewery. So I think he definitely appreciates what homebrewers do for beer in this country. So I'm sure he'll have an interesting talk.
Now, in the afternoon on Friday, Humulus Lupulus, The Eternal Quest for the Ultimate Hop Impact.
Right, and this is another talk that originated with the Craft Brewers Conference. Matt Brennelson is the brewmaster for Firestone Walker Brewing Company.
Mm.
I know a lot. Most people probably are not so familiar with their beers, since they are only distributed in California. But they are one of the fastest growing breweries in the country, and producing really excellent beer. In fact, Matt Brennelson is won the Midsize Brewing Company Brewmaster of the Year the last two World Beer Cups, and at least once at Great American Beer Festival as well. That is no small feat.
Mm.
2 years in a row at World Beer Cup, where we have beers coming in from all over the world, and over 2,000 entries, for one person to be able to win enough awards to take that Brewmaster of the Year title twice is really extraordinary. He is definitely a very knowledgeable person, and this talk I've actually seen it at the Craft Brewers Conference, is excellent. Does a great job of covering different hops and their flavor compounds and different hopping regimes. So that's one that you won't want to miss. Of course, it's right next to Randy Mosher's talk on beer and food, finding the perfect pair, which is another one that you won't want to miss.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling I'll be sending Steve to that one. He's the cook between us, so he should get a lot out of that as well.
Yeah, it's kind of a growing movement in the country of being able to pair beer with food, and people are always familiar with wine and cheese and pairing wines with different meals, but actually beer has more varied flavor compounds than wine. So in a lot of cases there are foods that you just can't find a good match with wine, but there's almost always a beer that can be paired with pretty much anything. So it's kind of a new thing that people are starting to discover, but it's a very good thing. And also something I think you find amongst a lot of homebrewers is that not only do they like to brew their own beer and come up with their own beer recipes, but they tend to be good cooks amongst homebrewers as well. A lot of amateur chefs out there that also brew some really good beer.
They're known as the foodies in the marketing world. Yeah, if you develop good taste buds for beer, then you probably enjoy good food as well. Now, what is going on? There's the AHA member meeting that afternoon as well.
Yeah, we do this annually at the conference. It's a chance for members of the American Home Brewers Association to meet with the staff of the American Home Brewers Association and the AHA governing committee, and just kind of get an opportunity to voice opinions about what we're doing and if we're doing things right, or if there's things we can improve upon, or if we should be taking different directions. It's really the AHA is a grassroots organization. It's run by our members, and we serve them as the staff, and so it's really their opportunity to get their voice heard.
That evening, there's a club night.
Club night is usually the most popular event at the conference. We have clubs coming in from all over the country, and they'll set up booths and not only serving their beer, but often they'll bring some of their own culinary creations to share with the group, and usually they're quite creative, and just a really fantastic event. We got over 500 homebrewers packed into one room, and probably 25 to 30 different homebrew clubs serving up their different beers.
Wow.
Really fantastic opportunity to get to know people from all over the country and just have some really great fun with homebrew. It's definitely extraordinary, and there's nothing I can say to really explain what exactly this is like. I mean, it's just an amazing thing having all these different homebrews and such a wide variety of different beers and different foods, and often the clubs will develop a theme for their booth. You'll see we've had castles and military compounds and all kinds of different things, and knights in armor, and so they really go all out, and it's just a really fun event.
And then the last day of the conference on Saturday, Bob Hansen, another alumnus of this program, Going Big, Life After 1064. So big beers,
right? So this is kind of the opposite of Steve Hamburg's talk on session beers. This is about brewing big beers, strong ales and strong lagers. Bob Hansen is with Breese Malting Company. He's the brewer for Breese, so he works their pilot brewery and developing new products. So he's definitely a very insightful person in terms of new ideas in brewing.
And the episodes that he appears on in our archives are some of the more popular ones that people write in about. And, you know, so Bob is very knowledgeable and knows how to talk, so
sure,
good
yeah,
combination.
He's a regular speaker at both the Homebrewers Conference and the Craft Brewers Conference.
And going on at the same time, Commercial Calibration Live.
Right, this is a regular column in Zymergy Magazine. We have a Commercial Calibration where we have some of the finest BJCP judges in the country evaluating commercially available craft beers. And it's kind of a way to see how the judging process works and just the language that's used in evaluating beers. It's been in one of our most popular editions to Zymergy Magazine, so it's kind of exciting to be able to have this actually going on live, so people will get to see how judging actually works if you've never actually been involved in homebrew judging. This will be a very interesting talk, and I believe they're working for a kind of Iron Chef theme for this, so it might be even a little more dramatic than your average homebrew judging.
So they may not know what they're getting into when they get up there? Is that what you're saying?
Possibly. I'm not exactly sure how this is going to work out. I'm very curious about it myself.
And later on in that morning, we have a barrel age to look at the use of wood in brewing, and then brewing Belgian beers with Belgian brewers.
Todd Ashman, who's doing the barrel age brewing. He is currently with Brewer Supply Group, but he is also an award-winning brewer, formerly of Flossmoor Station, and one of the foremost experts on barrel aging beers. He's co-founded a festival for barrel aged beers in Chicago, and so that'll be a really excellent talk, and that's actually one of the more popular styles coming out. In fact, at last year's Great American Beer Festival, the largest category was barrel-aged beers.
Really?
Which is extraordinary, because there was a new category.
Well, that's interesting in that, we're talking, about wine being considered, a better pair with food, and now beer is coming up in that regard as well. So, wines are known for their barrel. They're the wood aging, and now beers are following kind of in that same line as well.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different options with when it comes to aging with wood. A lot of brewers, especially home brewers, are now using bourbon barrels. And in fact, the commemorative beer is a bourbon barrel, includes some beer that was aged in a bourbon barrel. Speaking of imperial beer, is an imperial stout aged in a bourbon barrel. So it adds a lot of character, not only like the bourbon character, but the wood character as well.
Hmm.
And then there's also, you can use all kinds of different wine barrels. You pick up some of the wine flavors, or you can just use a straight-up new barrel in which you'll get a whole lot of oak flavors. So it's kind of an exciting new development in the world of homebrewing, and actually there are some wood barrels that are now available on the homebrewing scale. So you don't necessarily, most homebrewers aren't able to brew 55-gallon batches. So there are some new barrels out there that are designed for homebrewing scale.
We continue with the Belgian theme with Stan Hieronymus, another guy who's been on the show. Talking about his book, I assume, Brew Like a Monk, Trappist Abbey and Belgian Strong Ales and How to Brew Them.
Right. So he came out with the Brew Like a Monk book last year, which has been one of our most popular sellers. And this is a talk kind of based around that book and his experiences in Belgium and with writing that book. Give you some new insights on how to go about brewing some of these beers. Dispelling some of the myths that are out there about brewing some of the Belgian styles, including what kinds of sugars to use,
mm-hmm.
and those kinds of things. So that's definitely one that if you're interested in brewing Belgian beers, this is probably the foremost expert on how to do it at home.
Again, another guy who's knowledgeable and knows how to talk. So,
and right alongside that one, Ed Canty from Orlando Brewing Partners. Ed Canty is the former president of the Florida Brewers Guild. He's been very involved with both both the professional craft brewers and the home brewers in Florida. He's going to be talking about single hop beers, and getting to know hops through using single hops. So you can get a lot more knowledge about what a particular hop contributes by brewing with just one hop.
And then rounding out the conferences for that day, a couple of non-beer presentations.
Finish it off with some of the more potent beverages. We've got a whiskey talk discussing both bourbon and Scotch whiskey, and that's going to be from Bev Blackwood and Jeff Renner, no strangers to the homebrewing world. Bev Blackwood has been involved through the Foam Rangers in Houston, Texas for a long time, and is now a brewer at St. Arnold's in Houston. And Jeff Renner has been a frequent contributor to several of the homebrewing magazines, as well as a lot of the online forums, and is probably most famous for reintroducing the classic American Pilsner to the world of beer in America.
Now, are they going to be talking about, home distilling is still illegal.
Right. They're not going to be talking about distilling yourself. They're just going to be talking about different scotches and bourbons.
Yeah, distilling is a different animal from brewing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually more dangerous. You can screw up a moonshine or a home distilled beverage and wind up injuring yourself, right? I mean, the compounds that you can get out of a badly distilled batch can actually cause you some harm, whereas on the beer side, you don't have to so much worry about that.
Right. There are no known pathogens that can survive in beer, and I suppose that would be true of distilled beverages as well, but the process of distilling involves pressure and can produce some toxic alcohols that aren't so nice. So there's a reason why it's still illegal in this country to distill at home.
And then something that's definitely not illegal, meads. There's a presentation on judging meads. Are they more like beer or wine? And how do you give the mead maker the best possible judging experience and feedback? And that's a good question. Are they more like beer or wine?
Yeah, well, I think that the meads tend to be more towards the, have been anyways, at least in the last several decades, more aligned with the beer world, because it's mostly homebrewers who are making meads. When actually mead is a wine, it's not made from grains, and so it wouldn't be a beer, but it tends to be made by the beer makers rather than the wine makers. Mac Monroe is a local judge from the Florida area, and he is going to be giving a talk on how to evaluate mead for judging purposes, and using some of his knowledge of judging wines to give us an idea of how we might be able to better evaluate meads.
Do you see mead as a growing category?
Mead has been quite a popular category. We now have the Beer Judge Certification Program revised their style guidelines back in 2004, and they added a couple of categories for mead, so that there are now three categories, and we've actually been using three categories of mead at the National Homebrew Competition for several years before that. So it's definitely been a popular beverage amongst homebrewers, really right from the start, back when Charlie Vapazian founded the American Homebrewers Association back in 1978. The homebrewers were already making mead back then. It's a very simple beverage to make, and it's really easy to make a fantastic tasting mead.
And then to round out the conference, a BJCP update, and then the Grand Banquet.
Right, we've got the Grand Banquet that's been sponsored by Rogue Ales for the last several years. this is where we announced the awards for the National Homebrew Competition. And believe me, there is some tension in the air when those awards are being announced. we had over 1,000 different brewers submit entries this year into the competition. And like I said, 4,500 entries. This is by far the toughest competition in beer there is.
Mm-hmm.
So winning an award at the National Homebrew Competition level is a really extraordinary feat, and only the best homebrewers in the country will take awards. So it's definitely an exciting event.
Well, I can't wait. This will be our first National Homebrewing National Homebrewers Conference, and boy, we can't wait. And it'll be on us before we know it.
Yes, it is. It is fast approaching, just about a little over 2 weeks away. And I'm excited to have you there for the first time. I know you're going to have a fantastic time. Everybody always does. And it's a rare thing for someone to go to just one conference, because it is so much fun. And there's no way that it can be explained in words how much fun it is. I guess we actually didn't mention that throughout the whole conference we have a hospitality suite where homebrew clubs from around the country, and many of them from the Florida area will be serving beers throughout the conference. So in between sessions you can stroll into the hospitality suite and find some tasty beverages, and they usually have some food available as well, and always a lot of good conversation.
Well, I hope to see you down there.
Oh, you will definitely see me down there.
Well, thanks, Gary.
Okay, thank you, James.
Well, thanks again to Gary Glass for spending time with us. We look forward to seeing him there and to drinking some beers with him. And, you know, remember, if you have questions that you want us to ask the experts on any of those topics that Gary and I talked about, drop us a line, and Steve and I will try to corner the experts and get an answer for you while we're down there. Well, next week, Greg Noonan, author and brewer, takes us through the topic of good water for homebrewing. It's important that you have good water for your brew, and Gary will help set us on the right track. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say hey, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. And while you're on our site, you can check out our online shop, where you can find great pricing on our DVDs and a combo deal to save you even more. In our first DVD, Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, we walk you through the extract brewing process step by step, from boiling to bottling. And in Basic Brewing, Stepping into All Grain, we take you through the all grain process, from milling your grain to collecting your wort. And it's not as hard as you might think. In fact, it's easy once you know how. And we'll show you how. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order it straight from us online. Us meaning me in this case. But that's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.